Hi, I'm Allison Hess.
And I'm Stephanie Graham.
Welcome to the Thousand Islands Playhouse Podcast. We have seven amazing shows to dive into for our 2026 season.
Join us as we talk to the artists that will make this season shine and get a behind-the-scenes peek at what's happening this summer, Dockside.
Don't forget to tune in
to give your ears a front row seat.
See you at the theater!
Welcome back to the 2026 season of the Playhouse Podcast. We're recording today on the ancestral lands of the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabeg peoples. We are recording on-site at the Thousand Islands Playhouse. My name is Stephanie Graham, and I am the Artistic Associate here at the Playhouse.
And I'm Allison Hess, the Education and Engagement Manager. Today, we're discussing the first of our Springer shows, the heartfelt comedy Sugar Road by Kristen Da Silva. Hannah Taylor has poured her heart into keeping her family's amusement park, Sugar Road, alive. Years ago, she shared a single, unforgettable night with Jesse Emberley before fame carried him away. Now Jesse returns, headlining the Spurs and Hearts Music Festival at the park, and the past comes rushing back. Sugar Road is a heartfelt story about the one that got away and the sweet surprises life delivers when you least expect them.
A perfect play for a summer day. We're happy to have the director of Sugar Road, Sheila McCarthy, with us here in studio today. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you so much.
No, and thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come and talk with us today. So you are a true multi-hyphenate. If we're going to have a definition of the word, I think it should have your picture.
Oh my goodness.
You have worked as an actor, director, writer, producer, dancer, choreographer, educator, and have worked in areas including film, television, voice acting, and theater.
For our audience, if you don't already know Sheila's work, some brief highlights include multiple seasons at the Stratford Festival, Shaw and Charlottetown Festivals, directing for Drayton Entertainment, Young People's Theater, and Here For Now Theater. And you've been seen on screen in the Oscar-nominated Women Talking, one of my favorite films. Your award-winning performances in I've Heard the Mermaid Singing and Emily of New Moon, as well as Little Mosque on the Prairie, Umbrella Academy, and the recently released The Miniature Wife.
You've been busy.
Yes, it seems that way.
I find it's always funny when people read what you've been doing and you're like, oh, did I?
I know.
It's only one thing at any moment at any time.
I know,
time.
But you have to remember I've been doing this for a very long time. And some of the things that come out, I did, you know, I shot 2 years ago because you're so busy. I'm like, well, actually, that work is done. But yes.
How do you balance and choose your projects? For context, on IMDb in 2025 alone, you had 4 film or TV projects released, as well as directing at least 2 theater productions, and probably more. In my research, I was trying to find out always, like, where's Sheila been in the last couple of years? But what do you look for in a project when you're thinking about what to do?
Okay, so that's, I get asked that a lot. And honestly, I look for employment. You know,
because a true Canadian career.
Well, yes. And the thing is, when you stay here and you do want to wear many hats in order to make a living. And it always looks on paper very busy. But, you know, there are certain ebbs and flows in this business. But in the last few years, I've sort of entered a new snack bracket, shall we say. I think after Women Talking, I'm 70 now. That is a whole other door has opened for me in terms of work. And that's been very exciting for me to embrace my age, which I kind of have always done. I wouldn't have gotten Women Talking had I ever done the fillers and the, you know what I mean, all that business. But I like to be busy and I really love directing. I really love directing theater. So I would say that my first love right now is that.
And you've directed film as well, though, haven't you?
I've done, you know, not that much. I did one short film, and I've got something in it, telefilm right now, fingers crossed, that maybe. It was a play that I directed for Fiona Mongila at Here For Now called Myth of the Ostrich. So Matt Murray has written a screenplay of it. So we're waiting to see if that gets financed. But that would be foreign territory for me. Like, I'm comfortable on stage. Directing a film is like a whole other beast.
Yeah, there's a lot of different technical elements that come in.
Yes. And you know, you just bake it till you make it with everything. You know, when I first started directing, I didn't really know if I could do it or not, but it's sort of what we do. Pull the wool over people's eyes, as it were.
You have many, many years of experience to back you up.
Well, don't tell them. Yes, yes, yeah.
And you've worked both in Canada and the U.S. extensively. Mm-hmm. What was it like working with Sarah Polley, one of Canada's most fantastic filmmakers, as we all know, on Women Talking, and navigating the Hollywood Awards season? Was there a difference between the American and Canadian sensibility when working on or promoting a film like Women Talking?
Oh, my goodness. That machine that the Americans do, that publicity machine, is incredible. I mean, I think we could take a page from that. But I mean, they have so much more money than we do. And they have the big studio behind that machine. So it's well-oiled. It was so much fun. And honestly, not that I'd been waiting my whole career, but the idea that I got to go to the Oscars. I mean, every year I've been sitting in my pajamas going,
as we all do with our snacks.
Yes, with our popcorn and our M&Ms, you know, and then finally at, I don't know, 65, I got to go. It was just so much fun. And I didn't want anything from it now. Like, it was just the icing on the cake for me to be able to do that. But shooting Women Talking with Sarah was a real watershed moment for me and for many other people. We'd come out of COVID. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't mind COVID. I kind of liked the idea of waking up in the morning and being relaxed and not stressed about having to show up and put makeup on. And I kind of liked it. So all of a sudden when Women Talking happened, it was like being at the Olympics every day because it was, there was such a high bar in that project. And then the whole publicity tour, which lasted for a year, which I thought would just last forever, was unreal. They know how to do it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, we're all certainly celebrating on this side of the border about all of its, you know, beautiful press and beautiful impact that it had.
Well, then at the Oscars, when Sarah won her award
for a screenplay,
and she got up and she, for best screenplay, and then she said, everybody stand up. And I stood up in that hot pink dress and I looked down the aisle and I could hear all the Canadians up in the balcony cheering and standing up, all the crew who were able to come. And I looked over and all the movie stars were sitting there and I went, I was so embarrassed. And yet I thought, yay, Sarah. Yeah. And, you know, that made headlines. And I was so mad. I said, why didn't you guys stand up? And they were like, no, too cool for school. Whatever.
We're going to celebrate Canadians. That's
yes,
for sure.
Yes. Yeah. Oh,
and,
my
and
goodness.
And you filmed it in Canada. Mm-hmm. But so was most of the crew Canadian? And then
yes,
just sort of the production company was American?
The whole crew were Canadian. Mm-hmm. David Fox was in it and Michelle McLeod and other Canadian actors. But it was an international film. And that was, I mean, I was so starstruck when I started. I mean, the very first day of filming, there's Claire Foy, the queen, washing my feet in the first scene. I went, this is so insanely surreal that the Queen of England is washing my feet. Oh, and Judith Ivey from New York. I mean, just, oh my goodness. And Frances McDormand. I mean,
yeah, that
it
cast
was
stacked.
Stacked for sure.
So in The Well, which was released last year, you were executive producer as well.
I guess
as one
I
of
was.
The performers.
Yes, I was.
As it was listed, at least.
Yes.
Maybe talking more about Cardinals then, which is a bit further ago, but mm-hmm. what, the role of producer, because our audience might not really understand that. What is the role of a producer on a film project like that? And again, especially for something like Cardinal, The Well as well, but Cardinal especially because you were a lead. How do you balance those two kind of
roles?
Well,
by the time I got to set on Cardinals, the work, the sort of producer work was done. So that hat was off. But that was a project. And, you know, I'd come out of doing this funny series, Little Mosque on the Prairie, for 6 years. And then, you know, there's always a kind of desert where you don't work because people associate you with that. And so Aidan Shipley and Grace were students at Ryerson and they had this project named Cardinals and they pitched it to me and said, we're going to win you an award with this movie. And I worked with them on it. So I guess I midwifed as a producer on it, midwifed the script a little bit because I felt that the conflict in that movie wasn't quite enough to merit the crime that my character commits. So we worked on it and they took my notes to heart. And I'm so happy I did that movie because, you know, it was a low budget independent film and it was a whole other genre for me to return to as a dramatic actress. And it changed people's perceptions and it really did a 180 in my work, in my career after that. But I would say as a producer, it's the work you do beforehand. And then as executive, certainly on The Well and in Cardinals, I just focused on being an actor. I just finished a series called Yaga with that my daughter produced, Mackenzie Donaldson. But it was originally a play that Kat Sandler did, and now it's a TV series, and Mackie produced it. And I watched how hard she worked on that, wearing her producer hat. So I have not done that. Wow. that is putting out fires all day long. Yeah, I have renewed respect for that particular job, watching her.
Well, let's talk some more about theater, since that's why you're here at in Gananoque. You began your career as a performer. When did you decide to add directing to your toolkit?
Well, I was cast in a show, Little Mosque on the Prairie. And when you shoot a series, it took 4 or 5 months of the year. I thought, I need to do something else. So John Bourgeois at Humber was running the film and TV department. He said, would you like to come and teach? And I went, well, I did 1 week at National Theatre School teaching, and I really liked it. It was fun. And I said, well, I could do something. He said, well, maybe you could create a comedy on film. So I sort of nurtured that and created this little program and started that. And that was fun. And then Sheridan came my way and said, well, would you like to direct something? And I directed a couple of musicals there. So it was just it snowballed into directing more theater. And again, not really knowing if I could do it. But once you start, I thought, you know, I've been doing this a long time. I realized, oh, I do have an interest and a passion for this.
And acquired knowledge that, you know, you sort of...
Yeah, well, you don't realize it until you're doing it. And
you don't realize it.
I think, you know, I know, having been an actor for so long and having gone through, you know, stages of stage fright and I can't do it and all of those nightmare things that we go through as actors, I really have a lot of empathy for. So as a director, really have tried to nurture that. And I worked with great directors. I must say, Janet Wright taught me so much as a director because she was sort of no muss, no fuss. You know, if you sort of blew it, she'd go, yeah, that sucked. And, you know, but it was never a feeling of being wrong or you can't do it. Her safety net was always there. And that's something as an actor I always really needed and wanted. Even as a dancer in Charlottetown, when Alan Lund would compliment my jetés, then they got higher, as opposed to being decimated by a director. I've always needed the kind of positive attitude. So that kind of started that passion for me. And I think I really love it because it's not about me. Like when I'm directing, and you must find this, Stephanie, you're so focused on other people. It's such a relief not to be worried about acting.
Oh, yeah. You get to sort of hug the room. And I really love that image.
Me too. Me too. And we've both been doing this for a while, and I don't feel pressure when I'm directing. I mean, that's why I love coming to places like Gananoque, because there's a freedom in places like this. I mean, there's no time, but there's also a freedom. And I just don't feel the pressure. I feel really free.
For both of you, as directors who began as performers, do you think that gives you insight into how to really communicate what you need from your actors and your performers?
I definitely feel that it does, especially in those areas where you can see an actor floundering, been there many times. And then it's sort of learning, because every actor is so different, how to win that actor over. And mostly it's with honey. And I don't know, I think in this time of chaos and the world that we're living in right now, there's a sort of kindness and gratefulness and feeling of, here we are in Canada. Let's just celebrate who we are. Aren't we lucky?
As you already said, Sheila, the empathy that you have for the actor's process, you've been there, done that, you know, so you can really connect with where they are in the process. Mm-hmm. You have an idea about that. So I think it's so useful to have been a performer and then transition to directing.
Yes. And I always try to not impose my take on something. That's hard to do sometimes when you can see it and you can hear it. And it just seems so easy.
So obvious.
You know? So it's letting them creep before they crawl and trusting that they'll get there. Casting is paramount and being patient with the process.
Yeah.
Looking back over the last few years with some of your directing projects, including Steel Magnolias, The Beaver Club, Come Down from Upriver, and as you mentioned, The Myth of the Ostrich, you know, there seems to be like a theme of these interesting stories about families and female friendship and female friendship of women of a certain age. What draws you to these plays? And is it intentional, or are you just naturally drawn to them?
I think it's a mixture of both. I think as an actor, you know, over the years, people are you worried about being typecast? I think as a director, you also can be typecast. And you have some certain amounts of success with a certain style of show, so people think of you. But I am drawn to plays, whether, like, the gender doesn't really matter, whether it's female or male. Like, I directed Scott Wentworth last year and Krista De Silva's other play. And I just love flawed characters. And I love her writing, Krista De Silva's writing, because her characters are so flawed. And that's just...
so human.
It's so human. It's such a great sandbox to be in, working with, you know, these imperfect underdogs. And why are they then the heroes? Why do they become the heroes? Anyway, I love that. And I, as an actor, I always look for that. But again, I do think people think of me for those plays as well. And I don't mind that. That's fine, you know, because they're great.
I think there's something so amazing about finding dramatic potential in those stories.
And people being hard on each other, and misunderstanding and missing. Like, you know, we all come from families with fractures, and she writes such incredibly deep three-dimensional characters butting up against each other. In Sugar Road, it's about mothers and loss and girlfriends misunderstanding and then lost love. And it's, you know, it's everything.
And wrapped also in this delightful code of comedy as well, too,
well, it's
right?
It's so funny. It's a very, very funny play. But it's also going to break some hearts. And I love walking that line between making audiences cry and laugh and confusing them a little bit. And where are we now? And just when you think it couldn't get any funnier, someone's heart is broken, you know, so delicious.
Yeah, I think that's what is beautiful in her writing, especially Sugar Road, this beautiful story of lost love and rekindling perhaps, and all the baggage that goes with all of those characters.
And keeping the audience uncertain right to the very end. And, you know, will they or won't they?
You have to come and see.
People love a will they, won't they.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You talked a bit about the importance of casting as a director. Can you talk a bit about the fantastic cast we have here?
Yes.
Like, how have rehearsals been? You know,
oh,
as you said,
it's... they're just all hopeless. No, they're all just...
oh, no.
You know what? Honestly, it's a dream cast. Fiona Mongila, who runs here for now, she said, what, can I throw my hat in the ring? I went, how could you possibly have time to come and do this play and run Here for Now? She said, I do. And I went, okay, great. And Debbie Collins, I've worked with twice. I did Sexy Laundry with her at Gravenhurst a few years ago, and then Beaver Club last year. And I adore her.
One of the funniest women in theater.
I want her in every show I ever direct. She can do everything. And this role, whether Kristen knows it or not, was written for her. Audiences are going to eat her up. She has the biggest heart in the world, and she's one of the funniest people on the planet. And this role is all that and more. And then John Cleland, I did not know. You know, I said to him, I can't believe you came into audition after your resume. And it's funny that our careers had never crossed paths, but he's just born to play Ray. And then Will Carr, our heartthrob.
Our country heartthrob.
Our country heart. He hates being called that, but he came in, he played his guitar, and he's, you know, British, and he came in and he just twanged through this audition. I went, I am in love with you. So audiences are going to love him. He's so vulnerable and sweet and perfect. And the stage management and the crew backstage and, well, the one crew backstage.
Yes.
And Louise doing lighting and Robin Fisher doing the sets and costumes. My work is done. Like, honestly, it's like, get out of their way.
Beautiful team.
Yeah, it's a hugely great team.
How's your time been in Gananoque so far?
I've never been here before, and everyone's been so welcoming. And part of being in theaters like Thousand Island is that you get to know everybody and you get to know everybody's names, and there's a great care making sure you do. And I feel very much part of the community here. So it's just wonderful. And there's something so great about being in a small community too. So almost before the season starts, it's quiet and it's everyone's just focused on the show. Brett has created an incredible empire here. And when I was asked to come here, I talked to a lot of actors who've worked here, and everybody without question went, just go, just do it. You can jump off the dock. You'll love it.
Have you been to any of the restaurants, or have you visited anywhere? We always like to give a little shout out, because sometimes, you know, people will listen to this podcast on their way into town. Would you recommend anywhere?
We went to the Stone Water for, you know, everyone has their drinks and sweet potato fries there. Fantastic. And the music there, the guy singing was fabulous. We wanted to steal his guitar for our show. And then a few nights ago, we all went to the Thousand Island Curry House, and that was fantastic. Staff there were
amazing. Food there,
amazing food. So those are the two places that I've been to.
That's great. And I mean, Gan, for such a small town, has so many options.
I know. So more to be enjoyed.
Well, thank you again, Sheila, for coming to the Green Room to chat with us today.
Thank you to Matt Mudo for recording and editing our Playhouse podcast. And a special thank you to Mark Hunt for composing the theme music for the Thousand Islands Playhouse podcast.
For more ticket information, visit us at thousandislandsplayhouse.com.
See you at the theater!